Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
About the Nancy Guthrie case, let's go over to Lil Bri, Brian Koberger. He has filed to withdraw the guilty plea he entered for the murders of Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zanna Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin. The whole filing leans on what was recovered from the victim's hand, and almost nothing being reported about it seems very accurate. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is with myself and retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake today. As we break down where this is at, let's start with what the claim is. And it's from the broken plea book, basically. He's citing what the author cited. It's not from an actual report. The FBI lab took debris from Ethan Chapin's hand. The word they used was debris, not clumps of hair. That was in a book that was written. That's not part of the actual report. So I think that's important to understand, number one. But Koberger doesn't quote the actual police report. He quotes a book and says, see, look at that. That must be something here. They compared it against one person on earth, Brian Koberger, and wrote down that none of it matched him. One of the strands matched Ethan's own hair. The rest, we don't really know, wasn't matched to anybody. Then the report says the rest was preserved for possible future comparisons. 3 years on, nobody has ever publicly established whose it was. His petition calls it clumps of hair, not language from the filings, from the broken plea book. That he thinks proves his innocence. The honest answer is we don't know what it proved because nobody finished the actual work. What's your take on this, Jen, on the clumps of hair? Is this something that can be very quickly explained and okay, that's great. Isn't that cute, Brian? You came to us with this. Here's your answer. Go back to your cell.
Well, no, I can't be easily explained because they're going to have to do a lot of work to get the DNA. Secondarily, I mean, he has thrown his biggest advocate and somebody who, you know, I got to admit it. I mean, it was $5.5 million that went to her team.
Yeah.
So she had other motivation. But I have never seen somebody so zealously represent somebody. And I mean that seriously.
Yeah.
She would have three experts when only one was needed. I think she had four experts maybe when it came to the genetic genealogy when she was trying not to have that put in, something like that. It was outrageous. The media, when she wanted the media out, she had three experts there do charts and graphs. And it was unbelievable what she did. She was a zealous advocate of his. So I think he's going to be hard pressed. Having said that, why is anybody surprised? It's funny. I put out a tweet about this right when he pled. I said, this is all in the plan. This is his plan. There was no way he was going to sit there. He bided his time for the right time when things had kind of softened down. And here he comes again out with the reveal. And I don't think anybody who really has followed him closely is at all surprised about this. And my only thing is, and I know this is insidious, if I tell you, if there isn't great documentation by Ann Taylor about everything she did that counterpoints what he is alleging, man, I will just really be shaking my head if you get where I'm going there.
Yeah.
And I...
Are the T's crossed and the I's dotted?
And it, well, as I understand it, because I remember when Broken Plea first came out and I made the true attempt to read it and put it down because it was pretty unreadable. Yeah. And I explored it, you know, because I explored it. And I remember, I think we talked about it with Bob and even Eric Faddis at the time. And that is, the claims are just dumb because it wasn't part of the process yet. In other words, he pled guilty based on everything they've been through so far, which was a lot. It was overwhelming. And Ann Teller was working. I mean, we all agree. We were scared she was going to do her job better than anyone else because she was really his advocate. And then he pled guilty before they could even process anything else in the file, anything, any of the other evidence, including debris in hands. And so it wasn't that it was done and overlooked or it was excluded. No, it hadn't been part of the process yet of the investigation of the trial because it didn't get that far because everything else prior to that was already overwhelming that he pled guilty to. Then he stood in front of the judge three times, asked, did you do this? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. To all the murders, did you get good counsel? Yes. Did you get good? I mean, it was so thorough. I mean, they did such a good job. And again, the claims made in the book that he's resting his laurels on, to my knowledge, not being a lawyer, listening to our lawyers say that it just isn't legitimate because it didn't reach that point yet where they would do that extra investigative work on it. So he's just barking in the wind because, you know, like we said with Rex Heuermann, I know I said it the other day, Rex Heuermann's using information as his only currency. So if he's got more bodies out there, as he gets bored and people aren't paying attention to him, he's going to start trickling out more information like Dennis Rader did. And like all these people that are narcissistic, self-centered, megalomaniac asses do, that they're going to trickle this stuff out. Since Koberger didn't have time in his short, pathetic life to kill any more people, he's spent his information currency. So he's going to be getting attention any other way he can. I think, I tell you what, as people start ignoring him, please ignore this freak. You know, the one thing we might eventually get as he gets older and more bored and doesn't get the right bananas that he wants in there is that we might finally figure out and he might start trickling some areas maybe to look for where he secreted a knife, maybe where his clothes wound up, maybe how he took that car apart so thoroughly. So if you just ignore him, we might actually get a little bit more.
Great point.
Bill, I guess my fear on some of this is what was going on with the prosecutor's office. Where, you know, how were the T's crossed and the I's dotted there with Bill Thompson, who we've affectionately referred to as Santa Claus several times on the program? Yeah. You know, we never saw him in action other than, you know, the statements that he's made, that the case never went to trial. I honestly felt I was not super feeling confident about Bill Thompson and where this was going to go and how strong of a case he was going to make. Not because the case isn't strong, but because I don't think Bill Thompson has the reps to do a case like this as effectively as Ann Taylor did. We're going to go back into this, I guess. We're going to take a look at some of this stuff. Where does it go from here? With these hairs that are, you know, or the debris, we should be clear. The verbiage was debris. If it is hairs, I guess it's hairs. Are they going to go test these because Koberger's making a stink? Or is it like, we don't have to do shit. You can do all you want. You can, you know, bang your head against the wall and hit the pots and pans. It doesn't matter. You've already pled. It's game over. We don't have to go investigate anything here. I guess what sort of levers does Brian Koberger have to pull here?
He has one lever, only one under Garza. All he can do is show ineffective assistant of counsel. That's the only ticket to get a new trial. Yeah. Hairs and all this other stuff, it's not going to do it. And I would believe if she did her job right, which we know how competent she was,
Yeah. She
should have documented all of that, exactly what was given to him, that he would have known about the debris, you know, that he had the full case file. And that covers her for in terms of what she discussed with him. Remember, he's he's accusing her of like making up stories of what it would be like in prison to convince him and coercing him. I mean, that's what he's saying. I find it absolutely nauseating that we are believing one word Brian Koberger says. But your point, Tony, is does it matter? And I don't believe it does at all unless they can show ineffective assistance of counsel. And I can tell you, if Ann Taylor doesn't have that documented, that would be stunning.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, and I also, in the last week, I watched the Idaho Murders College Nightmare, the Netflix special on it, which really focused on the victims, the families, the Gonzaleses. And it's a great show because, to the point, and I agree, the prosecutor didn't fill, you know, Santa Claus didn't fill your heart with the confidence and everything. And I thought this early on when I watched some of the video footage of the Moscow Police Department showing up on, like, I think a couple of weeks ahead of time with a noise complaint or something, and how those law enforcement officers interacted with the students, I was really impressed. And when you watch that special, same thing. I was very impressed with, you got a very small department with the Moscow PD, and I thought they did the investigation very, very, very well. The leadership internally in that, I thought, was very impressive. It wasn't chaotic. It was very structured. They didn't have a huge lot of experience, but they knew how to deploy what they could. They knew how to partner with people, and I think they worked very good with the prosecutor's office. In other words, very rarely in life do you have everyone firing at 100% or 110%. So when one person is falling maybe a little bit short, you got the other one taking it up because they're doing a great job. And I think Moscow PD did my props to them. Very rare that we can say a police department in one of these cases did a great job. I really think they did.
One of the questions that gets thrown out here, and it's the first thing that ran through my mind, was, okay, because if we're going to go back to what the thing Koberger's arguing is that he wasn't told about the handful of debris. Ann Taylor can have done her job, you know, stunningly in every other lane. But if he wasn't told about that, and it was, you know, basically phrased in the book as it was some sort of, you know, exculpatory evidence, I don't know that it really truly is at the end of the day. There's a thousand things that point to Brian Koberger. But people are going, why did Ethan have a handful of anything? Wasn't he killed in bed while he was laying there? Didn't even really know what was happening until it was too late. I saw one of the comments said Steve and Christy Gonzalez talked about this. They said that his hand slipped behind the bed and touched dust bunnies. I mean, I can see that. I guess that does make somewhat amount of sense. But we don't really know for sure. I guess, why does he have a handful of anything to begin with? I mean, it feeds the conspiracy, folks. And that's where I'm like, okay, well, what's the answer to that? Why would he have a handful of that? Maybe that's the answer. What do you think?
I love that answer. It was funny. I was just looking for a set of car keys, and I reached up on this shelf that I haven't been on. I mean, there's hair, there's dust bunnies, there was a cobweb. I'm like, I was just looking for my car keys, but because nobody has, or these car keys, because nobody has been up there, I mean, and under a bed, and just imagine the hairs and everything that could accumulate. I mean, I don't want anybody looking under my bed, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a place people don't clean as thoroughly as they probably could. I agree with the Gonzalez family. And then beyond that, there are all of these documents are bait stamp, B-A-T-E-S. They're all what we call baits. So there are particular numbers that are assigned to everything in that file, everything. And so there's going to be a record that Ann would have made about what baits went to him, baits 1 through 20,000. And then I sent the whole disk with these terabytes on this date. This is something that's, and I know when you talk to Bob, he can verify this, that this is something that as a defense attorney, it's defense attorney 101. Just like prosecution 101, I'm going to keep track what I give to the prosecutor because my prosecutor isn't doing that because I'm giving the evidence.
As the
mope working the case.
And here's an important thing to keep in mind, I think, for everyone that thinks this is something big. So Koberger is basing everything that he's doing, because if you look at the language, it's cut and paste directly from the book Broken Plea. So let's look at where Broken Plea came from. Broken Plea came from a very retired FBI agent from years ago who never worked homicides inside the FBI, who got this from one of the people that worked for Ann Taylor, that had signed a non-disclosure, broke the non-disclosure, and handed over files to this to the author of Broken Plea, didn't conduct interviews, didn't conduct anything. So this is all hearsay from a file given by someone who wasn't allowed to give it in the first place. So take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, there's, I agree. My concern is if there was an over, I mean, what happens? What happens if Koberger did not get the baits on this? What if he did not, for whatever reason, not, and I'm not saying anything nefarious or that Ann Taylor intentionally withheld anything, but, you know, human errors happen. Sometimes the files don't get where they're supposed to go. Does he have a leg to stand on if he says, well, I never had that information when I made this decision, and they can prove he never had that information when he made that decision? I mean, human error can restart shit. And I'm would this do that, even if it's shown that he didn't have it? I mean, we don't know the answer to where it goes, though, right now.
Well, I think it's the totality of proving that a lawyer gave ineffective assistance of counsel.
Yeah.
That is something that is a pretty high bar,
yeah,
considering he's convicted, to go over.
Sure.
I don't even think that would be enough. I know Bob will probably know that answer better than me, but I can't think of one case that I ever worked that got to the appeal stage where something like this was thrown up at the wall and it ever stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know. I mean, crazier things have happened. You know, who would have thought we're going to have Alec Murdaugh trial number two?
Well,
you know, I mean, it's a different total dynamic, but it, you know, it's like, stranger things have happened, you know.
So here's the legal standard for it. Under the Supreme Court Strickland versus Washington test, the defendant must prove two things: deficient performance, that the lawyer's work fell below an objective standard of reasonableness, basically not that no competent attorney would have done what they did. And the second is prejudice, that there is a reasonable probability the outcome would have been different if the lawyer had performed competently. So it's an extremely high bar. It's an uphill battle, unlikely.
It'll be fascinating to watch, and I hope it goes nowhere and Brian Koberger can go back to his cage. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Days before Brian Koberger pled guilty, prosecutors handed the court a list of 180 people they might call to convict him. Newly released filings reported by Fox News put Amanda Koberger on that list. She's his sister. She's already been named on his own defense team's mitigation list. Both sides wanted her in that courtroom for reasons that couldn't have been more different. Within days, he took a deal and ended the case before a jury heard a word of it. 13 months later, he filed 5 handwritten pages from the Idaho Maximum Security Penitentiary, arguing that his family's involvement in his defense is the proof he was coerced into confessing. The people the state lined up against him are the people he's offering as evidence that somebody forced his hand, and whether any of it works comes down to one person who isn't him and isn't the judge. Two sides signed that agreement. He got his life out of it. The four families got one thing back, and it wasn't justice, and it wasn't answers. It was finality. That was the entire consideration on their side of the deal. His actual innocence is his truth, I put in air quotes. He told the New York Times, 3 claims hold the petition up. His lawyers were ineffective. Evidence that could have cleared him was kept from him, and he was frightened into signing my lies about what death row in Idaho actually looks like. The mechanism he's using is real, and that needs saying up front, because a lot of the coverage is treating this like a crank letter mailed out of a cell block. Idaho Code Section 19-4901 isn't an appeal. It's a separate civil case, which is the only reason he's still standing, because he signed his appeal rights away as part of the bargain. New evidence is allowed in. He filed inside the window. A judge read that handwriting and assigned a taxpayer-funded lawyer. So the door is open. Anyone telling you this is legally impossible is simply wrong. Now, impossible and odds of it working are two very different things. But is it impossible? No. You can hit a wall there. Once a defendant has been sentenced, Idaho requires him to show manifest injustice before a court will let him take a plea back. Not regret, not a bad trade, a fundamental miscarriage proven by the man doing the asking. And that question, the case against him, is a transcript. He dictated himself. Under oath, he said he understood the agreement. Nobody promised him anything. Nobody forced him. Judge Stephen Hippler asked whether he was pleading guilty because he was guilty, and he said yes. Then he was walked through all four killings and asked whether he'd done it deliberately with premeditation. And he said yes to every single one of them. And Taylor stood next to him and told the court she consented. And the judge put one more thing on the record. He said he wanted to be certain this man had actually committed these crimes because he didn't want him pleading guilty to something he hadn't done. That judge decides whether Koberger was lying then or is lying now. There's exactly one person alive who can get him past that transcript, and it isn't the public defender that he was just assigned. That statute didn't appear out of nowhere either. Idaho put it on the books in 1967. It was sitting right there while prosecutors walked four families through what a plea would mean. Nobody stood at a microphone in Boise and mentioned that Idaho law hands a convicted man one more swing by right at public expense. They said, it can't do it. Won't happen. Well, they didn't read the rules. The second claim is the one pulling all the oxygen, and it's the one nobody is getting right. That includes the people telling you that it amounts to nothing. His petition says clumps of hair were found in Ethan Chapin's hand. That isn't the FBI's phrase. The lab called it debris. Clumps of hair comes out of a book written about this case by a retired FBI agent named Christopher Whitcomb. And Koberger pointed at that book in his Times interview as if it's some sort of evidence and not just some sort of literary abomination. So the language is borrowed. That's not the same as saying there was nothing in his hand. There was something in his hand. When a person is killed, their hands are bagged at autopsy, meaning they literally put bags around their hands. All four of them were. That's not a plot point. It's procedure, and there's a reason it's procedure. It's that a person's hands are the last place that they can leave you anything. What they touched, what came off the man doing it to them. Those bags went to the FBI lab, and this is where it gets thin, and I don't mean thin for Koberger. The lab compared what came out of those hands against exactly one person, him. They looked for hair consistent with his head hair sample and wrote down that none of them were found. One name, one comparison, one answer. They never reported whose hair it was, though. The last word that report gives is that the additional debris from Ethan Chapin's right hand was preserved for possible future comparisons. Preserved, set on a shelf, which is a polite way of saying nobody has ever established where it actually came from. So when you hear it was all Ethan's own hair, that runs further than the record goes. A DNA expert working for the defense tested at least one hair out of that hand and found it consistent with Chafin's own. At least one. What the rest of it was, publicly, no one has said. That question had exactly one place it was ever going to get answered. It wasn't buried and it wasn't secret. Ann Taylor put those FBI lab reports in front of the court herself as defense exhibits about 3 weeks before her client pled guilty. Her name is on the filing. Whatever he claims, he was never shown. The record has his own attorney walking towards a courtroom ready to use it. Then he pled. The trial went away, and with it went the only proceeding on earth where somebody would have been put on the stand and made to explain what was in that young man's hand. Nobody has to answer that now. Isn't a technicality? That was part of the deal. There's still a problem with the picture his petition wants you holding. The autopsies indicate Chapin, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee Gonzalez never got to their feet. Chapin was asleep in his girlfriend's bed. A man who never woke up doesn't fill his hands with the killer's hair. That's not a legal argument. That's just physics. And somebody in that room did fight. Zanna Kernodle was on the floor. 67 wounds, according to her autopsy, that was detailed in the filing. Which cuts, or with cuts, I should say, that went into the bones of her hands. She's the one person in that house with a real chance of tearing something off the man who did this. Her hands were bagged too. Same lab, same single comparison, same empty result. Her name isn't anywhere in the position, in the petition. There's a second piece of hair evidence too, and the coverage keeps mashing the two together. A forensic scientist named Brent Turvey told Fox News Digital he found hairs on the frame of Kernodle's bed on the side pressed against the wall, held there by dried blood underneath where Chapin's right hand was photographed. He says the FBI excluded Koberger. That location is the only reason it has traction. And I'll grant it, it reads like a struggle, but dried blood doesn't really date anything. It tells you the hair was there before the blood and really nothing else. That was Kernodle's bed. She slept there every night. The blood only pinned down whatever was already there. And for a second, do this. Reach behind your bed. If you don't clean it all the time and consider these are college kids, you know, not usually always the cleanest folks. You might find dust, you might find hair. And if you're being murdered and you're flailing about, you might end up with a handful of whatever the hell is behind the bed in your hand. Doesn't mean it's the murderers. It just means it's dust and stuff. Could that be the answer? Yes, very easily. But is it? Shannon Gray, the attorney for Kaylee Gonzalez's family, put the ceiling on all of it. He told Fox News Digital, the hairs aren't exculpatory. The defense had them. Somebody was going to testify about them. And at most they established is that another person could have been in that house. Not that Brian Koberger wasn't. And that holds. Even if every strand came back to a stranger, somebody else having been there is not the same claim as him never being there. Unknown hair doesn't lift his DNA off the sheath snap beside Madison Moken's body. It doesn't erase a swab out of the family garbage in Pennsylvania that identified the father or the man who left it. It doesn't undo a K-bar knife sheath and sharpener ordered on Amazon months before. And Turvey wasn't an outsider who pried this loose. He was retained by Koberger's own defense examining Koberger's evidence for Koberger's trial. Which is what takes the floor out from under the claim, as written. Go back to his language. His attorney never told him about that exculpatory discovery that prosecutors handed over. Handed over. The state disclosed it. There's no prosecutor concealing anything here. No suppressed file. One claim aimed at one law firm. The third claim is the flimsiest, and he leans on it the hardest. He says his lawyers promised him life in prison would come with contact visits, freedom of movement, and a job, and frighten him with a story about touring an 8x8 death row cell. A defense attorney doesn't control prison conditions. No lawyer in America can guarantee a client a prison job. And disappointment about how confinement turned out has never been a fundamental miscarriage of justice. So say a judge lets this move forward. Taylor gets sworn. Eliza Mathos and Big Barlow get sworn. Turvey is already publicly demanding exactly that. And then the part he doesn't appear to have thought through. His affidavit says both parents and both sisters sat on most of the attorney-client discussions before the deal. He offered that as corroboration. What he built was a witness list. Those four people can be put under oath and asked what was actually said. Privilege belongs to the client. It's his. And he spent it to buy this claim. 3 years of litigation, a venue change, a gag order, and a mountain of sealed filings couldn't get Ann Taylor to say one word about what passed between them. He did that himself by hand from a cell. He's never done the one thing that comes next either. Brian Koberger, under oath, cross-examined by the state of Idaho about a confession he gave in open court not once in 3 years. That's precisely what the plea bought him. And this position, or petition, I should say, is a request to hand it back. And every one of those hearing dates is a day four families have to decide whether they can sit through it. Which brings it to the only question that decides any of this. Nima Romani, who's been on the show a lot, a former federal prosecutor, laid the realistic path out for Newsweek. The plea gets set aside if Ann Taylor and her team fall on the sword and concede they misled their client or withheld something important, which they won't. They deny it, he said. The attempt largely fails. And Koberger does not get his new trial, which is very likely where this goes. Nowhere. That's the door and the handle. It's on her side. So this comes down to whether one of the most respected capital defenders in Idaho will torch her career, invite a bar complaint, and swear to malpractice, all of it, to hand a second chance to a man who confessed in open court while she stood beside him and told the judge she agreed. Worth remembering what she was actually doing in that case. Over 2 years, Newsweek reported, that team tried repeatedly to get the death penalty off the table. They attacked the DNA. They argued his autism diagnosis made him less culpable. They floated an unknown second suspect. None of it worked. And trial was a month out when the deal came together. That isn't a team that cornered a client. That's a team that ran out of road. Lori Levinson, a criminal law professor at Loya University, and a former federal prosecutor put it to Newsweek another way. Unless he can show everyone lied to him, the plea sticks. None of that makes this frivolous. And none of it makes it impossible. It just means the outcome was never his to control. And there's a piece on winning that he seems to have set at zero. If a judge vacated that plea, the agreement dissolves with it, and the agreement is the only reason the death penalty came on the table. Nima Romani called him foolish for trying, and said that if this case is tried, there's a very good chance he's convicted and sentenced to death. Idaho Attorney General Rule Labrador said his office stands ready to do whatever is necessary. He's petitioning for the return of the needle. The lawyer he's calling ineffective is the one who got it taken away. saving his life is the failure he's alleging. But his ledger isn't the one that matters. Christy Gonzalez told Newsweek she believes this is judicial games, and she's confident it goes nowhere. And if a judge did grant a new trial, her family's all for it. The Gonzalez family called it the mosquito you can't swat, and said he wants another chance to roll the dice. That's a receipt. They wanted the trial, and they gave it up. No jury, no witness, no state made to prove a single element out loud in front of the world, surrendered in exchange for one thing: that it would be finished. And nobody had the authority to promise it. Not the prosecutor who negotiated it, not the judge who accepted it, not the agreement every one of them signed. Ethan Chafin was 20. Zanna was 20. Madison was 21. Kaylee Gonzalez was 21. Their families were told the case was closed. A man with a pen, a cell, and the rest of his life proved otherwise in 5 handwritten pages. And there is no filing, no ruling, and no hearing on any calendar anywhere that gives that back to them. Where do you think this goes? Anywhere? Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. And if you've not done so already, be sure to check out the podcast. Take the audio version of this program with you wherever you go. The QR code is on the screen right now on YouTube. If that's where you're watching us, just follow us there, and it'll take you to whatever podcast player you prefer. Go check it out and hit subscribe. We do appreciate that, and you'll like it too. All right. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.